It is good to be here today. It is a very beautiful Sabbath day. We are blessed to be here. Sometimes life just doesn't seem fair, does it? Things used to be going so well for so many people. Things were probably going a whole lot better for most of us. It doesn't seem fair, does it? Oftentimes, our children might complain about something not being fair. They might even say to us, "It's not fair. He gets to do this, or he gets to do that, and I don't. Or she gets to go spend the night with some of her friends, and I don't. That's not fair." Sometimes it could be accompanied with a little bit more emotion and energy, a little bit more excitement. But the list can go on and on for us, at home, at work, and even at church. It's just not fair. We all could probably fill in this blank with a particular scenario of our own. You know, life just doesn't seem to be fair. And guess what? You're right. Life is not fair. So what are we going to do about it? It's not fair. Now, we can spend our time, we can get down in the mouth, and we can focus on all the things that we think aren't fair to us. And we can hang our head. We can feel sorry for ourselves. Or we can wait for someone else to feel sorry for us. We might even spend our time bad-mouthing those things or those individuals that we think are receiving preferential treatment to us. Now, we can sit around, we can feel bad, we can mope about things, or we can get off our couch and do something about it. You know, the choice is ours. What can we do about it? What do these following three things, I'm going to give you a list of three things here, and I ask you a question. What do these three things have to do with how you and I handle unfairness and adversity that life throws at us? And these three things are three ideas or three topics, if you will. The first one is our duty. The second one is a revolution. And the third one is crossing over. Those, again, are our duty, a revolution, and crossing over. And this might seem like an unfair question I pose to you, but what do those things have to do with how we handle adversity and unfairness? Another question, what is our ultimate goal? All of us in this room, what's our ultimate goal? Where are we headed? Where are we going? My purpose today is to encourage us all to keep moving forward toward God's kingdom. You know, that should be our goal. That's where we're headed. Every day we move a step closer, or we should be moving a step closer to God's kingdom. We must keep focused on what God has in store for us, for each one of us. You know, keep that in our mind, what God is holding in front of us. You know, when I'm finished today, I hope we all can see how these three things or these three ideas that I've given you are very important to us in how we handle life's unfairness and life's adversities. These three things are essential for you and I to be able to move forward and for the Church of God to be able to move forward. I want to start by going back to Exodus and looking at the children of Israel leaving Egypt. You start by turning back to Exodus chapter 2. We're going to look at several verses here through the first few chapters of Exodus. You know, this is all familiar territory to us. But as we look at these verses, I want to point out some lessons that we all can draw on today that are very much relevant to us today. We can use these lessons in our lives. The children of Israel were referred to by God as His people. They were in bondage or slavery in Egypt. And we know that this pictures sin for us. You and I are also God's people. And we too are in bondage, or we're in slavery to sin. Like the children of Israel, God will deliver us from our bondage. God will deliver us. He will also guide us, and He will protect us. But our deliverance may not be in the most direct route, may not be the way we want it to be. God will test us as we are able. This is a growth process for us. This is how we grow. Now, the children of Israel were multiplying and prospering in Egypt, so much so that the Egyptians were afraid they would be overtaken by the children of Israel. A new king arose, and the children of Israel were put into slavery to keep them down, to keep them from overpowering the Egyptians. They were made to work very hard. They were making bricks and doing all manner of service in the field. Now, they were made to serve with rigor or harshness. Well, they had it pretty rough, sounds like. We'll start in Exodus chapter 2. Look at a couple of verses in chapter 2, verse 23. You know, it happened in the process of time that the king of Egypt died, and the children of Israel groaned because of the bondage. And they cried out, and their cry came up to God because of the bondage. In verse 24, God heard their groaning, and He remembered His covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and Jacob. You know, the children of Israel cried out to God because of their bondage, and God heard them. In chapter 3, in verse 7, you know, the Lord said, I have surely seen the oppression of my people who are in Egypt, and I've heard their cry because of their taskmasters. For I know their sorrows. You know, God saw the oppression the children of Israel were under. He knew the pain that they were experiencing. You know, He was aware of what they were going through. Verse 8, So I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up from that land to a good and large land. You know, God was ready to deliver them out of their bondage. In verse 10, Come now, therefore, and I will send you to Pharaoh that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. You know, God referred to them here as His people. You know, and He was going to use Moses to bring them out of bondage, to bring them out of Egypt. You know, God was maintaining ownership of the children of Israel. You know, He cared for them, and He was concerned for their well-being. And He heard their cries. You know, Moses then goes to Pharaoh to ask him to let the people go. And as you read on, Pharaoh ends up making life harder on the children of Israel. They were required to do the same amount of work, but now they were to go out and gather the materials they needed, plus do the work. So life had gotten more difficult on them. It was worse for them. We'll turn over to chapter 5. Chapter 5 and verse 22. You know, so Moses has made some pleas with Pharaoh, and life has gotten harder on the children of Israel. So Moses returned to the Lord and said, You know, Lord, why have you brought trouble on this people? Why is it you have sent me? For since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done evil to this people. Neither have you delivered your people at all. And so Moses is asking God, you know, why you made it more difficult? You know, why? You know, they had it hard enough already, but why make it harder on them? Chapter 6, verse 1. Then the Lord said to Moses, Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh, for with a strong hand he will let them go, and with a strong hand he will drive them out of his land. Now God's response, You're going to see what I'm going to do. You're going to watch what I'm going to do for the children of Israel. Watch what I will do to Pharaoh and do through Pharaoh. You know, He will let my people go. In verse 6 of chapter 6, therefore say to the children of Israel, I am the Lord, I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians. I will rescue you from their bondage, and I will redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgment. I will take you as my people, and I will be your God. Then you shall know that I am the Lord your God who brings you out from the burdens of the Egyptians. And I will bring you into the land which I swore or promised to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And I will give it to you as a heritage. I am the Lord. Now God is reassuring Moses here, you know, that He will deliver the children of Israel. He will take care of them. He will fulfill the promises that He made. You know, He will make good on His promises to them. We'll move on to chapter 7. In verse 1, so the Lord said to Moses, see, I have made you as God to Pharaoh, and Aaron your brother shall be your prophet. You shall speak all that I command you, and Aaron your brother shall speak to Pharaoh, that he must send the children of Israel out of his land. And I will harden Pharaoh's heart and multiply my signs and my wonders in the land of Egypt. But Pharaoh will not heed you, so that I may lay my hand on Egypt and bring my armies and my people, the children of Israel, out of the land of Egypt. So it was God's plan for Pharaoh to harden his heart. This was all part of God's plan, so that He could bring His people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt. If the children of Egypt, or children of Israel, had been allowed to leave at the first request and without incident, what glory to God would that bring? You know, how striking would that have been if Moses asked Pharaoh to let the people go and he said, okay, take off, and they left. And what glory would that have brought to God? Think about how much more powerful an effect their departure had after all the plagues and the difficulty that they went through and that the people in Egypt went through. And you can read on in chapters 7 through 12 about the plagues that God brought on Egypt. You know, those 10 plagues were pretty bad. Some of them were pretty bad, would be pretty bad to go through, pretty difficult. You know, it's interesting to note that the Egyptians worshipped many gods in their societies, part of their religious system. And many of those gods took on the personification of something to do with nature. You know, they even viewed the Nile River as being divine. And it's interesting to note that many of the plagues that were brought on them affected the Nile River. Isn't that interesting? This would prove the weakness of the entire religious system of those Egyptians. Let's turn over to chapter 12. Verse 31. Then he, Pharaoh, called for Moses and Aaron by night and said, rise and go out from among my people, both you and the children of Israel, and go serve the Lord as you have said. Pharaoh gives the order now to leave Egypt. And we've had enough. You know, we've gone through enough. Go, leave, go worship your God. In verse 35 of chapter 12, the children of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, and they had asked from the Egyptians articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, so that they granted them what they requested. And they plundered the Egyptians. Now the children of Israel found favor with the Egyptians before they left, and they plundered them, taking gold, silver, and clothing. And the number of them in verse 37 was 600,000 men. And so if you take into account the women and children, there was probably you know, over 1,200,000 people. This is a large group that's leaving Egypt. And chapter 13 then, in verse 17, it came to pass when Pharaoh had let the people go that God did not lead them by the way of the land of the Philistines, although that land was near. For God said, lest perhaps the people change their minds when they see war and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the way of the wilderness of the Red Sea. You know, God didn't take them the shortest, most direct route, because when faced with the difficulty of war with the Philistines, they might want to turn back to Egypt. So they had to take perhaps a longer route. You know, and that appears to be for their own good. But we notice also in verse 21 and 22 of chapter 13, said, and the Lord went before them by day in a pillar of cloud to lead the way, and by night in a pillar of fire to give them light, so as to go by day and night. He did not take away the pillar of cloud by day or the pillar of fire by night from before the people. No, God went before them to guide them, to lead them, direct their way. You know, He didn't take away the guide from them. So He was with them. And in chapter 14, we get to the crossing of the Red Sea. And again, it was part of God's plan for Pharaoh to follow the children of Israel. You know, here they are facing the Red Sea, and they see the Egyptian army coming after them. You know, this is probably pretty scary to them. You know, in verse 4, then I will harden Pharaoh's heart so that he will pursue them. And down in verse 9, the Egyptians pursued them. You know, and the children of Israel were afraid when they saw this coming. In verse 10, and when Pharaoh drew near, the children of Israel lifted their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them, so they were very afraid, and they cried out. Then they said to Moses, because there were no graves in Egypt, have you taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you so dealt with us? You know, they were afraid. They wanted to go back to the land of Egypt. You know, it would be better for some of them to die a slave than to follow God. In verse 13, Moses said to the people, do not be afraid. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which He will accomplish for you today. For the Egyptians whom you see today, you shall see again no more forever. The Lord will fight for you, and you shall hold your peace. You know, stand still. Stop your complaining and witness the power of God. Watch God at work. God will fight for you. He will protect you, and He will deliver you. And then verse 15 through 29, you can read about the crossing of the Red Sea. You know, and the Egyptians did follow them through. But God did protect the children of Israel. He delivered the children of Israel, and the Egyptians died that day. And down in verse 30, so the Lord saved Israel that day out of the hand of the Egyptians, and Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Thus Israel saw the great work which the Lord had done in Egypt. So the people feared the Lord, and they believed the Lord and His servant Moses. You know, they saw God's power. They saw it up close and personal. They saw it in action. They witnessed this miracle of God's protection and God's deliverance. In the last part of verse 31, read that again. The people feared God. They believed God. After all the things they went through in coming out of Egypt, the difficulties, the adversities, it didn't seem fair, maybe, to them. You know, we were slaves in Egypt. At least we had food, we had a place to live, we had a place to sleep. and you drag us into the wilderness. Now we're going to die in the wilderness. That's just not fair. They had their ups and downs, but they reached the point in their lives after they witnessed this power of God, and where they feared God, and they believed God. So why do I go back and rehash the story of the Red Sea crossing? Some of the lessons that you and I can take from this and from their experience, you know, are very much relevant for us today, if we will take those into consideration. Remember these lessons for us today. One lesson is that God values His people. He is concerned about them also. God knows the pain and suffering His people go through. You know, God is aware of what we're going through. And He's concerned and He cares about us. God hears the cries and the prayers of His people. He hears our cries and our prayers. And God will deliver His people. God will deliver us. But that deliverance may not always be the shortest, most direct route. We may have to take the long way. And it may be that we can't handle the short way yet. We may have to stand still and watch God deliver us. You know, see the power of God at work. Another lesson, we must recognize the power of God. Recognize His power. And also a lesson, we must have proper fear of God. And we must keep His commandments. You know, we need to reach this point in our lives as the children of Israel did. You know, to fear God and keep His commandments. You know, and this brings us to another topic or area that I mentioned earlier. And that was our duty. So we've seen from the children of Israel crossing the Red Sea, you can apply that to the crossing over topic that I mentioned. And also now we want to look at our duty. If you would turn to Ecclesiastes chapter 12. In verse 13, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Or this is the purpose of our existence. Or this is what we are to be doing. Fear God and keep His commandments. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether it is good or whether it is evil. Proper fear of God and keeping His commandments, that's what's important to us. It's the purpose of our existence. That's what we should be focused on. You know, God will take care of the rest. It says God will bring every work into judgment. You know, the word used for fear here is not a word that would have us be hiding in a closet somewhere, cowering or shivering or shaking, but it's to mean to revere. You know, or be afraid in reverence, or revere and respect God. One way we might look at fear God then is to understand the power that God has. The power to give life and the power to take life away. To revere God for the power and care that He has for His creation, for us, for you and I. To have the right kind of fear and respect for God. It's a healthy type of fear. To know that God means business. It's healthy for us to know that God can back up the promises that He makes to us. That He makes to those that obey Him. You know, that God has the power to give eternal life. He can also give eternal death to those that do not obey Him. You know, there are many difficulties and things that seem to be going on today. And that's not my purpose to get into all of those. I want this to be encouraging to all of us. But as I've mentioned before, sometimes we can get caught up in that. It's easy for us to start reading something or following something, and we can get caught up in that. You know, where are we going to spend our time? You know, getting caught up in those things. You know, by people that are disgruntled or upset, different formats or forums. Or are we going to spend our time studying God's Word and try to improve our relationship with Him? You know, God knows the things that are going on. He knows what we're going through. He knows our pain and suffering. And He's still in control. God's still in charge. You know, just like with the hardening of Pharaoh's heart, you know, God has a plan. We don't always understand what God's plan is or know what it is, but maybe things are a part of God's plan. You know, and there's different issues going around. I'm not going to get into that or those. But we might consider, you know, maybe in some of the things that people are upset over is maybe God knows that we couldn't handle a particular thing at this time, you know, whether it be financially or for whatever the reason. Remember the children of Israel as God brought them out of Egypt. You know, He brought them out through the long route. He was concerned that if they faced war or difficulty, that they might return back to Egypt. So the important thing for us is to realize that God has a plan. You know, He knows what you and I can handle, and He knows when we can handle it. And we must remember this. We must remember that point. So what's more important to you and I? You know, a particular argument and which side we want to be on with that? Is that more important, or striving to make it into God's kingdom? You know, where should we put our energy? You know, we should long for Jesus Christ's return to put an end to all the evil and suffering that's going on throughout the world. 2 Corinthians 5, verse 9 and 10. You can jot that down and read it, but we see there that in verse 9, our aim should be to please God. And in verse 10, we're told that we all must stand before the judgment seat of Christ. And so we will have to give account for our actions. And as we saw in Ecclesiastes 12, verse 14, God will bring all these works into judgment. We're back to Deuteronomy chapter 6. We're still on this topic of fearing God and keeping His commandments. Deuteronomy chapter 6. In verse 1, Deuteronomy chapter 6. Now this is the commandment, and these are the statutes and judgments which the Lord your God has commanded to teach you, that you may observe them in the land which you are crossing over to possess, that you may fear the Lord your God to keep all His statutes and His commandments which I command you, you and your son and your grandson, all the days of your life, that your days may be prolonged. You know, it's for our benefit and for our good, you know, the commandments that God has put before us. Let's look at verse 10 of chapter 6. And it shall be when the Lord your God brings you into the land of which He promised to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you large and beautiful cities, which you did not build. And we see some other blessings there. Verse 12. Beware lest you forget the Lord who brought you out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. You shall fear the Lord your God and serve Him. And once we are experiencing the good things that God has given us, we also are encouraged or warned here to beware lest we forget that it was God who delivers us out of bondage. And we're to fear Him and to serve Him. And over in Deuteronomy chapter 10, in verse 12, "And now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require of you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all His ways and to love Him, to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul." Fearing God and keeping His commandments, they are for our benefit. It helps us. And another aspect of this, Micah chapter 6 and verse 8, you can read that on your own, but we're told there to walk humbly with God. This reflects our attitude. An attitude of humility as we fear God, proper kind of fear, and keep His commandments. But we still have one other area that I mentioned. We've looked at our duty and we've touched on crossing over. But another topic I mentioned was a revolution. So how does that tie into these other two areas? I want to relate to you the story of George Washington and the American Revolution. We're all familiar with that, but there are some details of that we may not realize, and I didn't realize it till I had actually watched a movie entitled The Crossing. And there's an article, too, I'm going to read some from, as Washington crosses the Delaware River. And this occurred December 25th, 1776. From this article, this was a desperate time for George Washington and the American Revolution. This army, Continental Army, was decimated. They were exhausted, demoralized, going through some pretty tough conditions. The weather was horrible. Many of them didn't have shoes on their feet. It was terrible conditions. And those men made a tremendous sacrifice, so that others may have freedom. The troubles had begun with the British, and these Hessian troops were driving them out of many of the areas that they were fighting in. And the British were in hot pursuit of them, chasing the Americans through New Jersey. And they pushed them into Pennsylvania by the end of December. And this Continental Army appeared to be merely an annoyance, that soon to be swatted into oblivion. So the Hessians, the British thought, well, we've got them licked. They're no threat to us anymore. And to compound George Washington's problems, many of the enlistments in his army, they were to expire in a few days from this time. So they were going to be released from the army. So he had to do something, and he had to do it quickly. His decision was to attack the British. The target was the Hessian-held town of Trenton, New Jersey, across the Delaware River. Now, during the night of December 25th, Washington led his troops across the ice-swollen Delaware about 9 miles north of Trenton. The weather was horrendous, and the river was treacherous. Raging winds combined with snow, sleet, and rain could produce some almost impossible conditions. Now, to aid to the difficulties, many of his men were marching without shoes through these conditions. And when many of his commanding officers thought he was crazy for trying this, this is a suicide mission. Now, you've got to be kidding me. We're going to go across the Delaware and we're going to attack these Hessian soldiers. Now, they were very disciplined, very well trained. There were 1,200 Hessian soldiers, I believe, in the town. And Washington went across with about 2,500. But they still were afraid. I mean, they were, by all accounts, they were no match for those soldiers. But George Washington made a decision to go. He realized the only decision or the only chance for survival was to cross that river. Because what his army needed for survival was on the other side of that river. The Hessian soldiers had food, they had clothing, they had artillery, and they had ammunition. If his army stayed on the Pennsylvania side of the river, they were going to die. They had no chance. So he realized the only choice was to cross the river. And when he even made the statement, I'm going to cross the river whether any of you guys come with me or not. I'm crossing the river. And during the night of December 25th, he led his troops across the ice-swollen Delaware River. The weather, as I mentioned, was terrible. They were marching, many of them, without shoes. The next morning, they attacked to the south. These Hessian soldiers were also known to party and live it up, especially on Christmas Day. So they were celebrating and having a good time. Washington knew what he needed to do, and he took his men across. They attacked to the south, taking the Hessian garrison by surprise and overrunning the town. After fierce fighting and the loss of their commander, the Hessians surrendered. Washington's victory was complete, but it was still a precarious situation because the weather was still terrible, still bad weather. And there was one thing I read, the Hessian army suffered about 900 casualties, and that was people that were either killed, wounded, or taken prisoner. And I think probably the largest number was taken prisoner. And one account I read in this article that George Washington's army had 4 men killed and 8 wounded. And although not apparent at the time, these battles were a decisive turning point in the Revolution. These victories pulled the languishing Revolution out of the depths of despair. It galvanized colonial support, and it shocked the British. And it convinced potential allies such as France, Holland, and Spain that the Continental Army was a force to be reckoned with. And again, these soldiers were decimated. They were cold, chilled to the bone, tired, wounded, beat up, used and abused. Very miserable conditions they were fighting in. And these Hessians were very disciplined, very well trained. And again, people thought he was crazy for attempting that mission. But George Washington felt the only chance of survival for his army was to cross the Delaware River. What his army needed for survival was on the other side. Again, they had food, ammo, artillery, and clothing, and his army needed it. The only way to get it, go across that river, take on the Hessians, defeat them, and get what they needed. His attitude again was, I'm crossing this river with or without you. Now you and I are in a revolution as well. We are in a revolution against Satan and sin. Satan and sin is standing between you and I and making it into God's kingdom. Satan is our Delaware River. The future God has planned for you and I is on the other side of that river. Do we have the same resolve that George Washington had? Are we willing to cross over the river? We must cross that river and defeat sin. It's our only chance for survival. Our eternal future is at stake. And another interesting point from all of this, is that when George Washington made that decision to cross over, His men went with him and they carried out their mission. You know, in the condition they were in, some of them without shoes, you know, soaked to the bone, chilled to the bone. They went with him. They followed their leader and they carried out their mission. Some of the lessons we can learn from this George Washington crossing the Delaware River, we must be willing to follow God regardless of how difficult it may seem. We must cross over and get past Satan and sin because our only chance at eternal life depends on it. We must stand for God whether we stand alone or not. We must stand for God. Turn back to Ecclesiastes chapter 12, if you would. In verse 13, again, let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. Now, this is our purpose. This is what's important to you and I. Fear God and keep His commandments. This involves having proper fear and reverence for God. And another aspect of this is that we do this humbly, with a humble attitude. Walk humbly with God. That's what's important to us. We need to make sure we take care of our duty. God will take care of the other things. Summarize the lessons we can take from this today. That God values His people. He's concerned about them. God knows the pain and suffering that we're going through. God hears our cries and our prayers. God will deliver His people. God will deliver us. But that deliverance may not be the shortest, most direct route. We may have to stand still and watch God deliver us. And we must recognize the power of God. We must have proper fear of God, and we must keep His commandments. We must be willing to follow God regardless of how difficult it may seem. We must cross over and get past Satan and sin because our only chance at eternal life depends on it. We must stand for God, even if we have to stand alone. We must stand for God. It's important that we do our duty. It's important that we fear God and keep His commandments because you and I are a part of a revolution. We are in a revolution against sin. We are engaged in a war with Satan and his evil, sinful ways. He's out to destroy us if he can. He stands in our way of reaching God's kingdom. Satan represents our Delaware River. What we need for survival, for our eternal survival, is on the other side. We must cross over. We must overcome and defeat Satan. We must stay focused on what God has in store for us. We must be willing to go after what God has for us, regardless of the circumstances. We must not quit. George Washington made the statement, I'm going to cross the Delaware with or without you. We must cross over. I'll see you on the other side.